Well, welcome everyone, and good afternoon. Welcome to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Monday, September 13, 2021. To begin with, please note that this meeting is being recorded as we record all the meetings, and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is wmata.com. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone calls. You know that you can press *6 to mute and or unmute yourself. If you would like to make some comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing *9. Everyone joining via video conference, you can click on the mute, on the speaker icon to mute and unmute yourself. And to raise your virtual hands, you under people under reactions, if you click on the hand icon, you can raise and lower your virtual hands. I would request everyone to please keep yourself on mute unless speaking. This helps eliminate any external noise. And we also have interpreters with us on this call, so it helps them do their job well if they can clearly hear and listen to the conversation. I would go ahead and take the roll call of the AAC members at this time. So please confirm your presence. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy. Deborah Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Marcy Goldstein. Marcy is on the call with us. Melanie Henderson.
Sorry, I had to unmute myself.
Thank you, Marcy. And thank you, Melanie. Steve Kaffin.
Present.
You. Thomas Mangrum. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg. Anthony did inform that he might be running a little late for today's meeting. Phil Posner.
Present. And Tino, check your email. I just sent you some information on masking.
Okay.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Summerford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. And Kelly Simonon. All right, that concludes the roster for today's Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting.
Anu, can I ask how many members are there?
Sure, give me one quick moment and I'll count.
Sure. We'll need a quorum to adopt the minutes, for example.
At this point, we have 9. I'm sorry, 10.
10.
Okay. Yeah, and actually, Tino, the subcommittees are committees of the whole, and you don't need a quorum to do the business of the subcommittees.
Okay.
Thank you, Dr. Posner.
That's one of the advantages of the subcommittees. That's why you can get work done.
True. All right, so we just concluded our roster. At this point, I would go ahead and share my screen, and I would read out the meeting agenda out loud. So if you would, please bear with me for a quick moment while I share my screen. Everyone who can see, please let confirm if you can see my screen.
I can see it.
I can.
Thank you. So we just went through the roll call of the meeting today. Afterwards, we would, Chair Calabia would review and approve the agenda. and July meeting minutes. Afterwards, we have guest speakers to discuss floating bus stop. That discussion is going to be taking place with District Department of Transportation team. Afterwards, we have a committee discussion for fixed route travel training. The purpose of this discussion is to compile recommendations, recommended instructions for persons with cognitive disabilities as far as the training curriculum is concerned, followed by e-paper sign reporting outages. This would be recommendations on a procedure to report the outages. Afterwards, we have public comment period, if any, and the meeting would adjourn at 6 p.m. At this point, I would stop sharing my screen. Like I said, we do have the team from District Department of Transportation. I would ask if there is any visual presentation, please describe your presentation for the convenience of any members and members of the public who are blind or have low vision. If any members of the public or any AAC members are looking to make public comments, comments during the public comment period, please do inform me. You can send me a chat message so that I can put you on the list. At the same time, I would say if anyone would like to make some public comments, you can email and contact us via phone call, which I can share during the public comment period. Chair Calabia, that concludes my announcements. I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. At this time, you have the floor.
Very much. First item, of course, is the review of the agenda and voting on approving the agenda. Is there anyone who would like any changes in the agenda? If not, can I have a motion to approve the agenda, please?
This is Doris. I move the motion. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Doris. A second?
Oh, I'll second it.
Thanks, Steve. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor? Say aye.
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 Hearing no objections, the agenda is adopted. And as was shown on a new screen, the first item, of course, is the subject of floating bus stops. And we're fortunate in having the a representative, maybe two, from the...
Yes. Chair Calabria, this is Anu. Do you want to go ahead with the approval of the meeting minutes as well?
Oh, sure, right. Sorry about that. No. We went over the draft minutes at our at the last meeting last Tuesday, and hopefully you've had a chance to review it. We talked about a number of things, including the new fare boxes, and the fact also that we're going to discuss fixed route matters in terms of people with cognitive disabilities. So having reviewed it last time and assuming you've read it since last time, do I have a motion to approve the minutes of July 12th. Everyone is muted, I guess.
This is Philippa, so moved.
Is there a second to Philippa's motion? Hello?
Second.
Thank you, Phil. And now, having moved and seconded the motion to approve the agenda, all in favor, say aye, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
No objections. Hearing no objections, the minutes of July 12th are approved. Back to the agenda. Let's welcome the representatives from the District of Columbia. We're going to discuss the floating bus stops. As a reminder to the membership of the Bus Rail Subcommittee, one of our cherished members, Charlie Crawford, who passed away last year, this was one of the issues that he brought to our attentions and that he was very concerned about. Carol Lopez visited a particular floating bus stop in Montgomery County. Maybe at a later date we can discuss Montgomery County's as well as what we learned from the District of Columbia today. I gather the District of Columbia have sent us what may be more ideal floating bus stops, and so let's hear from them now. The director of who's come from the DOT. I think you're muted.
Hi there. I'm Megan Kennedy. I'm with DDOT. I'm by no means the director.
Oh, okay.
Planner with the Transit Delivery Division, and I want to thank you for having us here today. I did want to note, I see someone's hand is raised. I don't know if that is something you usually take time for or you want us to continue.
Well, we will take that in order, but first, I guess we should hear your presentation on the floating bus stops, Megan.
Okay. Great. So I'm joined by several colleagues on the call here. I'll be doing part of the presentation along with Johannes Benehoff, who's also with the Transit Delivery Division, and also Cesar Barreto, who is with our Office of Civil Rights. He's our ADA coordinator. We also have some other folks on the call listening in, because this is really important to us. We want to make sure we hear your feedback and ideas. So we have Kevin Harrison, the Transit Delivery Division, and Spring Worth with the Transit Delivery Division, as well as Mike Goodnow and Will Hansfield with the Active Transportation Branch. And so I just wanted to make note of that. I think Cesar was going to share his screen for the slides, and I think Johannes is going to start the presentation off. So I'll let Cesar, are you able to share your screen?
This is Cesar. I provided the presentation to Anu, but I'm not able to present my screen because I need privileges.
Oh. No. Cesar, you should be able to share the screen at this point.
Received. Thank you.
Sure. We can see it. Thank you.
Hey, Johannes, are you on?
I am. Thank you, Megan. Hello, everyone. My name is Johannes Benehoff. As Megan said, I am a transportation planner with the Transit Delivery Division. I am going to talk through my portion of this presentation and then hand it over. And then when we have completed all of the presentation, we look forward to taking any questions or comments. So on the slide here.
Oh, yep. It was mentioned at the outset of the meeting, but I want to emphasize that since you have photos and because several of our members are of low vision, one is fully blind, if you could do your best to describe the photos as you go along, we'd all appreciate it.
Yeah, very much so. I was just getting to that. All right, so this first slide here says bus stops and boarding alignments and is our standard configuration for District Department of Transportation slides with our gray, red, and blue color scheme. Next slide, please. All right, so this slide is the agenda. We have four parts. We're gonna start with the requirements under the ADA. move on to types of bus stops in the district. Then we will talk about criteria for bus stop implementation. And then our last section is improvements to current conditions. There are no pictures on this slide. Next slide, please. All right, this first slide is the bus stop requirements for ADA compliance. This falls under section 810 of the 2010 ADA standards. So the relevant portions here are the boarding alignment. That's the boarding alignment for the bus is required to be 8 feet by 5 feet. And if you are standing to getting ready to exit the front doors of a bus, that would be 8 feet out and 5 feet wide. And they have a 2% slope requirement. They must connect to the sidewalk. And detectable warning surface must be in place where applicable. And then we also have standards for how bus pads, the material that will be used. And then the two pictures in this slide are examples. On the left, it is a layout of what that curb space would look like and what an ADA pad would look like visually from a top-down schematic view. And then the photo on the right is a bus in the overhead view with the dimensions represented out of the front door. And that is 60 inches wide and 96 inches out, or the 8 feet by 5 feet. All right, this next slide is the nomenclature we use for the four types of bus stops within the district. We have the tangent stop, the bike pedestrian mixing platform, a narrow floating bus island, and a wide floating bus island. The next slide, please. All right, the first stop is the tangent stop. So this is the most traditional type of stop. We have the most of these in the district. This is a bus stop located next to the curb. Buses use the parking spaces or shoulder as a transition to board. So here you'll see a picture of the most standard stop with a shelter, with a bus flag, a boarding alignment, a sidewalk, a shelter, and a bus pad, all labeled in white boxes to show kind of where those each one of those elements are. And next slide. The next, we have an example of a bike pedestrian mixing platform. This is a Zeekla product platform located on Brentwood Parkway near the KIPP College Prep campus. And this is a green, white, and yellow platform that extends from the curb out across a two-way cycle track. And then this allows the bus to stop in lane and uses that platform as a crossing point from the bus to the sidewalk.
Johannes, before you go for it, did you say a two-way bicycle?
Yes. The example in this photo is a two-way cycle track. So in the distance beyond the platform, you can see a protected cycle track with a yellow dashed line in the middle, which separates the direction of travel for the cyclists. And then the bus is outboard of the protection provided the cyclists. And as it pulls up and passengers load, they would walk across the mixing platform zone.
Just to be clear, bicycles can go, say, south on one lane and north on the other lane that we can see?
Yes, that's the rough orientation of this stop. But yes, they would be able to, on the standard American direction of travel is on the right side travel. So as you're looking at this photo, on the left side of the photo, bicycles would be coming towards you. And on the right side of the photo, the bicycles would be going away.
And that's even if the road itself is one way?
Yes, because this is separated from roadway travel.
Okay, thank you.
This is Pat Shane. Could I ask a question too? I'm visually impaired, so I'm trying to make sure I understand the diagram that you just went over. Mm-hmm. So then you have the bus stop out separated by two a bicycle lane, one going in one direction, one going in the other direction, probably about 8 feet, I guess.
In this case, it's approximately 8 feet. It will vary based on each location because not every location is exactly the same dimensions throughout the city.
So the question then that I have, and that's been asked before, is so you've relocated the bus stop to about 8 feet out. So how do I know as a blind person, how do I know where the bus stop is?
The flag has not moved from its position at the curb. We have designed this. This is an old configuration of a stop in this picture, but based on feedback from this original implementation as a pilot, we have redesigned the way that these platforms function. And then from the bus flag that WMATA installs, there is a visual guiding strips that are red, and also they have a tactile feel. I think Caesar might have the correct terminology for this, but they provide a guidance from that flag to the bus loading door across the platform.
So, okay, and then last question, then I'll listen to more of this. So as I leave the, and I find the bus pole, and I am walking across to the bus stop, how do I know that bicycles or scooters that are either coming from my left to right as I cross or right to left are going to stop for me? How do I know that? Sounds to me like we have a safety issue that I'm depending upon the good directions of bicycle riders or scooter riders to stop for me.
They are required by law to stop.
Right.
Just as a car would be required by law to stop at a stoplight. If you were crossing the street in a crosswalk and there's a red light, a car would be required to stop, just as a bicyclist is required to stop if a pedestrian is crossing this platform.
But you don't have any hybrid pedestrian beacons up. You don't have any APSs up for me to know that it's safe for me to cross, just like any intersection. And so what you have done basically is taken the conflict that you would have had between, let's say, cars and bikes, and you've moved that, you've eliminated that by building a protected bike lane, and you've transitioned that conflict between now bikes and pedestrians, but you haven't built anything in your current design to increase my idea of safety of crossing that 8 feet. I'm hoping that the bikes obey the law, at least when I have a pedestrian signal or a hybrid pedestrian signal, I have an indication that it is the walk sign is on to cross or anything like that. But is there anything being done to slow bikes down? Any road treatment, any beacons, any APSs being designed?
Or being implemented.
Being implemented in that construction. I mean, this is something Montgomery County and other parts of Maryland are already looking at.
I'm not familiar with the abbreviation APS. Could you please use
accessible pedestrian signal?
Yeah, accessible pedestrian signal. This is Caesar. I apologize. Caesar right. Barreto with ADA coordinator with DDOT. APS devices are considered. We are also looking similar to Montgomery County and similar to the other DMV locations. We are looking into implementation. That was part of the discussion on the later part of the presentations. As you know, this is a discussion and we want to make sure to hear your feedback. In addition to that, we have considered the race, as you can see here, is a race elevated bike lane. And we have created a elevation for a purpose to create a stoppage movement for the bicyclists and a slowdown movement for the bicyclists mm-hmm. to pedestrians. As mentioned by Johannes Benehoff, this is also required by law for pedestrians to stop. So In addition, we also, like Johannes mentioned, we left the signage where it is, the bus stop signage where it is, to make sure that we guide you from the sidewalk to the connecting adjacent movement, and included the sets of warning surface on the new versions of our C-class.
Now, this is Phil Posner. Looking at the diagram, it looks as though there's a ramp by the front of the bus going on. I don't see a ramp from the sidewalk to the bus for a wheelchair coming off the sidewalk.
That's because it is level with the sidewalk.
It is level with the sidewalk.
It's level with the sidewalk. Those ramps are for cyclists to cross over into the mixing zone. So they have a transition elevation, which indicates it's beyond the actual signage that is there, that they need to slow down because they are entering a sloped area, entering an area of mixing. So beyond the stop sign, this is another physical indication for them.
So there are ramps on both sides because I can only see the front ramp. I can't see the back one. The question I have is traffic law. You can't pass a stop school bus, but you can pass a stop city bus. And it might help if they change that so that you cannot pass any stop bus, be it a city bus or a school bus. Because if the bicyclist knows they can't pass a stop bus, they'll slow down when the bus has its lights blinking. And I don't know how easy it would be to install the same sort of blinkers on the city buses as they have on the school buses, where something actually comes out the side and blinks and says, do not pass me.
Yeah, that's a little outside of our scope. We do not control the legal configurations for lighting on buses, but I'm sure that WMATA is present and listening to those suggestions. Is there any other questions specifically that I could clarify with my description of this slide? We'd like to get through all of the types of platforms and then move back to questions.
Yeah, I'd like to confirm what Patrick Sheehan said about the signal. We have a university campus with lots of bikers and lots of pedestrians, and they have installed those sorts of alert crossing signs, and they have been very effective in protecting people. And it's really important. Sometimes when people get on a bicycle, they go. And they're empowered and they don't worry about anybody else except going straight ahead. And so having that signal is really helpful, letting them know something's coming up. It's like the speed bumps before the stop signs.
Bill,
that's really interesting. Sorry, Tina. I was just going to say that's really interesting feedback. I think we would love to talk about some different ways to improve the current conditions that are out there for these pilot locations. We have some ideas similar to what you've raised, and we have a slide a little bit later in the presentation, and I want to make sure we have time to get through to that. We just have a couple more slides on some different types of stop
let's move to the islands,
so I just wanted to note
this
that.
This is Doris Ray. Could I just ask a visual question, because I'm not seeing anything, and I think I'm following, but I'm not sure that I'm following. And the thing that I want to ask is, when we're talking about these slopes and ramps and things like that, what I'm not understanding is if I'm standing on the sidewalk and I'm at the bus flagpole and am I stepping off into a street and going to an island where the bus is, or am I not stepping down at all?
No,
because I know what the bus lanes are like here in Arlington, and you have to step off, and it's more like K Street with the islands.
No, you do not step off the curb. This is a flush with the curb and sidewalk. This is more of an extension than it is like a separated island. It is a platform that is designed to be flush with the sidewalk and curb.
But then how are the bikes going through there if that's the case?
The bicyclists have ramps at the beginning and end of the platforms parallel with the sidewalk and the lane that they are traveling in, the bike lane, and they raise up as they get to the platform on ramps to cross over.
This is Pat Sheehan. I have one more question I might ask.
And what kind of detectable warnings are on this thing?
Detectable warning strips are present at the end of the platform nearest where the bus would be pulled alongside to let you know that that's the end of that platform.
They have so,
but not on the side to keep me straight going down this walkway.
So to align you from the bus flag to the front door of the bus, it is the grooved type of detectable warning, not the bumps. I'm not sure of the technical name. If somebody knows, they can correct me.
This is Caesar. The term is detectable guiding strips. In difference to the dot, dot, dot version, it will be like a elongated dot, like a dash, dot, dot scenario.
So this is Pat. I have another question. How do I know when I get to the bus flag there that I'm looking at an extended curb, basically, where the bus is going to be out at least 8 or 10 feet?
Right.
How do you know that? Because you can see it, but what indication do I have? I could just be standing at the bus flag. Because the shelter, let's say, has been moved, so I have no idea the shelter's probably moved out to the extended area or whatever. I'm expecting the bus to come to the curb.
Exactly.
How am I supposed to know what the configuration is?
Yeah, I think that's a really valid question, and I think one, we'd really appreciate any ideas and brainstorming. I mean, I think there's potential for us to maybe have some information at the flag that could be, printed in Braille to help orient folks. There's a couple different types of these.
One thought
be important to know kind of what type you're at, because they don't all have the same, crossing with the bikes so I think you're right that it's going to be helpful to have some orienting information. And I want to make sure if Caesar had any ideas about that as well, to make sure he had a chance to respond.
One of the ideas that has come up is either using an audible pedestrian signal at that point, in which it can tell you what the current condition is. And as visually impaired and blind people are used to holding the button in for 3 seconds, whether using the hybrid pedestrian beacon or the APS, it'll give you more information, audible information on that design in front of you, whether it's a street crossing, an intersection, or something like that. It also has an arrow which usually points and vibrates so that someone who is deafblind will know the direction they're supposed to walk towards. So that's helpful, and that's standard, so that you don't have to go up to each intersection or bus and try to figure out, do I have, a floating bus stop? Do I have an extended curb? Do I have a standard curb? So that you'd want to find, you'd want to figure that out before you start designing, not after.
This is Ms. Rush. I went to the bus. Hello?
Yes.
Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
I went to the bus stops, 14th Street and K Street, and I'm totally blind. And I think I have suggested that we, the people who are designing, the ones who are talking now, you need to go with a blind person or a handicapped person and experience it with them, or blindfold yourself and you experience it. They are dangerous, and I want you to feel what I felt.
This is Philippa. I also have a question. Where the green and white stripes are you telling me bicycles would be on in that area?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, we all know one thing bicycles do not want to do, and that is stop. They'll do anything to keep from stopping. And trying to get a bicycle to stop would be like expecting a thief not to steal. I've dealt with these floating islands here in DC, and that's always the problem. When you come off the island, that the bikes, you know, they'll run a light, they'll do anything. They're almost about to run people over. I see them.
And that goes for scooters as well.
Right, and the scooters, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if we can move to the next slide.
You know, can I just say something? Tino, you know.
Yes. Okay.
Of all the discussion, the biggest concern is the reliance that is being placed on the awareness by the bus riders that a bus has pulled up, and they need to stop before the green and white. And so my suggestion is that there needs to be some kind of warning. You know, we see it very clearly, you know, when we're dealing with a train and you know, something comes down. I'm sure that's much too expensive to have here. But right now there doesn't seem to be any, you know, any warning to the riders who may be moving along with their minds somewhere else, and all of a sudden the bus pulls up. So that's just a suggestion for consideration.
Thanks, Steve.
Go to the next slide. And also suggests that there has to be a way that know that people are going to get out the front of the bus or the back of the bus. If they're getting out the back of the bus and they're blind, they're lost in the middle of that crosswalk.
Yes, next slide.
To go to the next slide, Caesar. And I do think the front door is typically the accessible entrance to the bus. So we definitely want it to focus and make sure that is easy to orient. And I really appreciate the feedback. I've been taking notes here that we've gotten so far. The next slide, I think, has another picture. This is one that is a similar condition, but it was, this is on Florida Avenue Northeast. It's another pedestrian mixing platform. It's a picture of one of the islands or the platforms on Florida Avenue. It is made of asphalt. It has, these were installed as kind of a temporary emergency measure to get this protected bike lane or cycle track, which is a two-way bike lane on one side of the street installed. They're now going in and doing a capital project to upgrade the corridor, so the conditions will change, but this was put in a temporary measure. What you see is kind of the platform is made out of asphalt. It's raised up to sidewalk level. The bikes go up a ramp on either side of the platform to cross over the platform, which has white thermoplastic going across the platform. To indicate where the pedestrians may be present. It has the detectable warning surface. In this case, the detectable warning surface is between the curb, right after you step out from the curb. I think that's an inconsistency with how we would do it now, but this was put in 2019, I believe. And it has a yield to PEDS sign, bikes yield to PEDS sign, as well as a flex post, a yellow flex post on that ramp up approach. So I would say this is not, this is again, kind of evidence of our really, you know, this being, these are new treatments and pilots, and we're trying to learn and improve them as we go. There is no text on this slide other than the title of the slide that I already read. The next type of...
that last one, the last one, I think it would be stronger to say stop for pedestrians, not yield. And also the height of the sign is so high, it's not where any bicyclist is going to see it.
Yeah, this is Caesar. Those two items that were mentioned were addressed as part of the emergency. We implemented an emergency because of the bicycle accident that occurred in Florida Avenue, and we implemented those actions immediately after we placed it.
Thank you.
Yeah, great, great point. I think the word yield is important, and making sure the sign placement is right. Was there any other questions on that last slide?
Again,
can I ask, are you going to use these over here in Arlington, and specifically in Crystal City, where they're about to build at Metropolitan Park, the site that is the Amazon headquarters site? They're about to build bike lanes and have buses on the outside. Are you going to use those there? Because right now, the whole picture I've got in my mind is the one of, and I know that Phil will be familiar with this, the one of trying to cross on Clarendon from the Navy Federal Credit Union side, the side opposite Liberty Tavern, not at Liberty Tavern, but on the other side where ECNV used to be, to the park where the elevator is. I am telling you that I agree with Ms. Rush, with everybody who has spoken here and said to you, those bikes are not going to stop unless there's something really positive that makes them stop, like Patrick was mentioning. I mean, and even so, this sounds like, to me, a very confusing thing. And I'm somebody who is going from being a high partial to now I have still usable vision, but, you know, I'm concerned about this, and I'm concerned about it in the dark as well, because they're going to be operating in the dark as well, you know, when it turns dark. So,
Doris, what's even worse, the county has made that a skateboard area. So it's not just the bicycles, the skateboarders are even worse.
It's everything. Yes, that's right. You're right. Absolutely. And the scooters. Absolutely. The whole thing. And they're coming up with policies down in Old Town Alexandria, too, where there are a lot of Metro buses going through.
This is Ms. Rush. It's not safe for who can see. I used to do K Street when I could see, and it wasn't safe. And now that I can't, it's worse. But this floating bus stop situation, like I say, I will gladly meet all the planners. I'll meet you. You tell me when, and it's rush hour, and let's cross. Good luck.
Take a blindfold for them.
Well, that's even worse, but they can see it and see they're going to be like, wait a minute, hold up. No, because bikers don't care. They own the street now more than cars.
This is Philippa. My number one question is, what is the point of these things outside? It looks cool or something. What were the planners thinking when they started these floating islands and all this stuff that puts bicycles and scooters in between people trying to get on the bus?
I'd be happy to answer that. It's a great question that we definitely should have put first in our presentation. Treatments, basically, these different configurations at the bus stop are trying to reduce weaving between bicyclists and the buses. And that is also a safety concern. We are being asked, you know, it's as part of, you know, the Mayor Bowser's, you know, budget proposal here to install a lot more bike lanes around the city and, you know, make biking safer and more accessible for folks. We're also being asked to make sure that we improve the operation and safety and efficiency of our buses. And so as we're doing, you know, projects to put in more bike lanes, we're wanting to make sure that we think about how the bus stops work. We just want to acknowledge these are new and we know there's a lot of questions and a lot of areas for us to continue to improve. And I appreciate the feedback here. But really,
I invite you to come to 14th Street anytime.
I'm so sorry. I'm still speaking. There is really just to reduce that weaving between the bikes and the buses to prevent, you know, a cyclist from getting hit by a bus. And also to, there are some efficiencies for bus riders, you know, if it doesn't have to pull to the curb and then pull back into traffic, you know, this is an in-lane stop. And so it can keep the bus moving. So sorry, go ahead, whoever was.
Okay, I was just gonna say, I invite you to come to 14th Street anytime. Half the time the bicyclists are not in the bike lanes. They're still in traffic weaving. They're on the sidewalks racing up on top of people. You know, and it looks like they're sacrificing the pedestrian to save a bicyclist.
This is Pat Sheehan.
We're gonna get to 14th Street. I think we have a picture of that
This is Pat Sheehan. What I would say and still maintain is what you've done is reduce the conflict between bicycles and buses. And you have now changed the conflict between bikes and buses to bikes and pads. And it's the same problem. Now, what you have done is if you're mandating that bicycles and scooters get off the primary sidewalk and are in the protected bike lanes, that's good. But what you also have to do is to allow for road treatments like what you might find going to airports, that kind of treatment, so that individuals who are visually impaired can hear the bicycles coming. You've got to install APSs or hybrid beacons so that the visually impaired person knows, you know, that the beacon is on for them to be able to cross because they'll have audible warnings. And you have to have a description of, are we looking at a floating bus stop with an extended curb? Are you looking at a floating bus stop where you have to step down and cross over 8 feet of protected bike lanes? Before you start installing anything, whether it's a pilot or not, you have to already put those things into consideration. I would suggest perhaps that you may want to talk with Matt Johnson in Montgomery County, who's, you know, installed a number of these. Not a big fan of them, but we've been through this over the last 18 months with Matt Johnson. And so they have lessons learned also. And they've done an awful lot of installations. The beginning ones look a lot like what you have already put in place. And so what I see here is that DC is sort of doing the same thing that Montgomery County did. And so I would suggest talking to Matt Johnson in Montgomery County and get some lessons learned before you go forward.
Hi, Patrick. This is Cesar Barreto, ADA coordinator with DDOT. I would like to respond to that. Yes, we are in conversation with Matt Johnson. We actually collaborated on a presentation that we did nationwide regarding the floating bus stops and what we need from the U.S. Access Board in order to improve the accessibility compliance on them. So yes, we are learning from the lessons learned. We're learning from their lessons learned. And if we are okay to proceed with the presentation, you are going to hear what we're trying to look in order to improve what we got already on the field and improve and improve what we are proposing on the next bus stops that we have.
Okay, Megan, good. Thank you.
I'm going to take the chair's prerogative of extending the time allotted for 10 more minutes beyond 5 o'clock. So you'll have from now till 5:10. But please go on with your slides.
Okay, great.
One suggestion I have from Florida is they have treated statewide bicycles as a moving vehicle. And if you violate a stop sign, you violate a yield sign, you get points on your driver's license and you lose your driver's license. And that's been very effective, particularly on college campuses where they do have cars as well as bicycles.
Okay, the next slide.
Right. So this, I actually didn't speak to this one yet. I'll do so very quickly. This is a different type of bus stop treatment. This is called a narrow floating bus island. We actually have one of these installed over on M Street Northwest in West End. And basically what we have two images of it. This is actually a rendering from a bus stop in Portland, Oregon. But what you see on the left is a bus pulling up to the narrow floating bus island. There's about a 4-foot step out space that has a detectable warning surface that a rider would exit onto. And then there's a narrowed green bike lane that's coming through after that, that's about another 4 feet. So this takes up about 8 feet of space total. And basically it's, you know, this is not a two-way bike lane, a one-way bike lane. And basically what this does is it kind of better delineates, you know, where are you expected to find the bikes and where are you expected to find the pedestrians. And then it has a couple of crossings across the bike lane that would be at the sidewalk grade. So the bike lane is ramping up to the sidewalk grade and it's narrowing, and there is a stop for ped sign at the approaches. And if you go to the next slide,
it's not a, you said, Megan, you said that this is not a two-way bike lane. It's a,
that's right. This is a one-way bike lane. So the bikes are traveling in the same direction as the bus.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you could go on.
Sure. The next one we have is a wide floating bus island. So it's kind of similar, but it has a little bit more space. So here you have, you know, and this is an example that's on 2nd Street Southwest down by the Audi Field Buzzard Point area. The bus stop is located on a curb extension. The buses use the travel lane for the stop, just like they have with the other ones, as they're in lane stops. But basically you have a little bit more space in the island part. So this, I think, has 8 feet between the curb next to the travel lane, and then for the bus passengers to wait. And then there is, in this case, a two-way bicycle lane that is crossed at two different points with kind of like crosswalk treatments over to the sidewalk, and the bike lane ramps up to the sidewalk grade and down. I don't know if this stop is actually active yet with bus service. I wanted to see if anyone else on the call from DDOT could answer.
Yeah, this is Cesar. I just want to point out that this bus stop is not active for WMATA in Metro Transportation. This is actually for buses loading and unloading for the Audi Field events.
Okay.
For the what?
For the events at the stadium.
Okay. The Audi Field, the DC United events. And I actually would love to go to the next slide, because I think we have a picture of 14th Street, which I think is a, you know, one that others on the call have experience with here. This is another example of a wide floating bus island. It's a little bit different configuration. I'll describe the image here. So basically we have, I think, about 8 feet where the bus rider, when the bus pulls up to the island, there's about 8 feet from the bus. And that includes a skinny shelter. It includes a railing along the backside. And then there's a ramp down to basically the crosswalk to cross, you know, left or right, either right across the bike lane to the sidewalk or left, you know, all the way across the street. across 14th Street. So the bike lane basically here kind of wraps behind the bus stop area. So a passenger waiting for the bus would cross, you know, in cross the bike lane and then go up a ramp and be on an area to wait for the bus to arrive. I wanted to just see, I think there's been some changes to this configuration since it was constructed and just ways that we know we're continuing to improve. Caesar?
Sorry, I was on mute. In this location, I want to point out that we do have audible pedestrian signal devices for the crosswalk crossing. We implemented those with the design and the proposed design. The railings protect you from going to the bike lane, which is on a low median. It's on a low curb. Since the median is located on the same height as the sidewalk, but the bicycle lane is kind of like on a low profile, protecting safety and security. And one more time, it's the providing connectivity.
Yeah, thanks, Caesar. Yeah, I've neglected to mention the bike lane here. It stays at the grade of the road. It doesn't raise to the sidewalk grade. If you go to the next slide, so I'm going to let Caesar take the presentation over from here. There's only a couple more slides.
Thank you, Megan. And thank you, everybody, for having your comments and discussion. And this is the part of the presentation that we wanted to explain, not only the what implementation we do based on the location, but we wanted to also explain how it's derived and how we get which type of bus stop we implement depending on the type of work. I hope everybody can see my slide, and I apologize. Okay, here we go. So like I mentioned, the type of bus stops that we just discussed, whether it's wide, whether it's low, or just a tangent bus stop, is based on the type of work that we do. Sometimes we do maintenance work, which just requires pavement markings, modifications, something as simple as just doing a small patch on the sidewalk, or just doing the pavement markings for the bike lanes or modifications to the bike lanes. In those cases, we look into the sidewalk space, we look into the design, and we configure that sidewalk area to determine that what type of bus stop implementation are we going to apply. Usually on the maintenance, we do the curb extension, the bulb out, or the bike modified merge mix pedestrian bicycle. Apologies. Here we go. In addition to that, we also have the pavement markings modifications, which is considered an alteration under the ADA. So we do look into the street design and layout. We look into the sidewalk space. We modify the sidewalk. We modify the shoulder. We modify the parking space. And we make sure that we can provide the best type of bus stops. Usually when we do pavement markings modifications, we do the bus stop. The type of bus stop that we use are the wide or the narrow bus stops, floating bus stops, medium bus stops. Last but not least are the roadway modifications, which are major alterations, in which we got time to evaluate and design and modify to the better extent possible. Those are, we look into the traffic volumes, we look into the safety balance, we look into the street designs and layouts. In addition to that, we make sure that the modifications do not cause any alterations to all modes of transportation. So during the evaluation, during the process that we have during the 2020, regarding the bus stops implementations and all the different type of bus stops implementations, we have noticed that we wanted to improve the current conditions that we have on these type of bus stops. We want to make sure that we have stops or geo pedestrian signage, mostly stop for pedestrian signage based on the ridership, based on the ridership of the bike lanes and the counts that we have for bicycles, bike lane usage. We also want to make sure that we have improvements to boarding alignments on bike pedestrian mixing platform. Make sure that it's oriented for the pedestrian rather than the bicyclist to go over the to go over the platform if we have it. Usually what you see on the platform are color greens and white. Those colors are referenced for bicyclists to let them aware that the next steps are interactions. We do have the truncated zones. We're looking into the detectable grinding strips, which leads us into walk across guidance. We're looking into the APS devices implementation. We're looking into installation of pavement markings as well. But last but not least, we want to make sure that you persons with visual disabilities have an audio from the bicycles. We're looking into a noise generator from rumble strips from the bicycles or vehicles. That way it lets them aware you can hear the vehicles coming with those rumble strips and the noise that the tires of the bicycles and the vehicles make to go through the median, through the bus stops. And one more time, as I mentioned, APS devices, push buttons for the bus stop area and connections to the intersections when we have wide floating islands, narrow floating islands as well. Implementation of railing is also a discussion to make sure we can guide you from one corner to the other. And we're also looking one more time into the detectable guiding strips, even though it hasn't been approved by the U.S. Access Board as a path of travel, a movement of guidance of path of travel. On my next slide, I do have a visual image. We wanted to make sure that you are aware that where are we receiving guidance from, not only from the U.S. Access Board, but we are also collaborating with the National Association of City Transportation Officials. They have one of the best guidance I've seen as an ADA coordinator regarding floating bus stops. And what you see in the screen right now is a visual image, a graphic visual image of an intersection corner with a bus stop located on a floating median island. The bus stop can be accessed. You can have access to the bus stop through three locations, either from the crosswalk intersection, from the sidewalk side on the north side of it, on the top side of it, or in the middle with an opening through the sidewalk connecting to the median. Through the image, you can see that there is a one-way bike lane through the intersection and pedestrians will need to cross through it. And you can see the sign, there's no signage on geo for pedestrians or stop for pedestrians, but there are some crosswalk, designated crosswalk areas. In the median as well, you can see some bollards at the edge of the curve next to the travel lane, but also you can see some railings on the edge side of the connecting to the bike lane, making sure that the person, the pedestrians loading and unloading the bus stop can direct themselves to three specific areas of crossing to the sidewalk and the path of travel.
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to point out something I think I neglected to mention was on this wide floating bus stop example, you have the 8 feet in the, you know, the island right adjacent to the bus there that's stopping. And then you have, you know, typically 5 feet next to it for the bike lane. And so that, you know, these are really, you know, we need to have at least that like 13 feet of width in order to make this kind of configuration work. We don't always have that space. And that's why you see some of the other options on the table that we've discussed, but just wanted to point out kind of the physical requirements for this.
Thank you, Megan. Moving on to the next image, this is another graphical image from the NACTO, National Association of City Transit Officials, on guidance on different type of bus stops. Again, this is more what we've been applying in the district and what you see in 14th Street. We see a intersection corner where the bus stop is doing the stop at the intersection corner. It's basically a near side stop. There's three, in this case, we have an elevated sidewalk and an elevated bike lane where we see on the floor saying yield to pedestrians, and we have multiple areas of crossing. One more time, connecting with the median, connecting through the sidewalk, and you do have the truncated domes at the edge at the curb in the median in the floating bus stop. I would like to thank you for your time, everybody. We will take all, like I said, this is a discussion. We wanted to hear your feedback. As you know, we started implementing these floating bus stops during 2020, and we wanted to ensure, we want to make sure that we produce the engineering, the enforcement, and the education portion of understanding the floating bus stops, but we want to make sure that we keep the safety, we keep the security, and we keep the accessibilities of our bus stops. So to the maximum extent feasible and in compliance with the accessibility guidelines. We want to make sure that your trip is enjoyable as pedestrians, as bike riders, and creating the best multimodal network that we can in the district. So at this time, we have heard from you, but at this time, we want to make sure that we got four more minutes for feedback. So
Cesar and Megan, mm-hmm. This is Tino, the chair of the Bus Rail Subcommittee. Can you make available to us the slide program that you've shown us so we could see it at our own time?
Correct.
You can make that available to us?
It has been available to Anu, Ms. Sharma.
If you could make it available to the subcommittee.
Yes, we will.
Tino, I received the presentation. This is Anu, and I will share that.
Okay.
Sometimes you speak, yes.
And also, it's important for us to know to what extent in these designing these things, did you include members of the community of people with disabilities and seniors? Were they involved in DC?
No.
No.
That was not an answer from Dita. I apologize. We have discussions with the Multimodal Accessibility Advisory Council regarding the bus stop floating bus stop implementation, and we got this feedback similar to the same feedback we received today. So that's where we started. That's why you see some of the implementations that we're proposing to do to the current conditions and some of the solutions that we're trying to practice.
Cesara, I'm not talking about feedback. I'm talking about during the design stage, were people with disabilities who are familiar with transportation issues involved with you and during the design stage and not after the fact? I gather no. Please, as you expand your designs, make sure that people with disabilities and seniors are involved with you during the process, not after the process, during the process, not after the process. We have two more minutes. Phil, the chair of the Accessibility Advisory Committee, any parting comments, or Patrick or Doris?
The only thing is, hopefully you're also talking to the people in Clarendon and Montgomery County, because your ideas were excellent. And I think it's good to share with them, because the Clarendon people are a little bit behind the curve.
This is Doris.
Yes, Doris, quickly.
What I see is that you really got to go back a little bit to the drawing board and consider planning, because the picture I see here is a very cluttered, erratic sidewalk. And I want you to take into account, for example, in Arlington and possibly in other jurisdictions, they're beginning to develop ordinances for what they're calling parklets, which are extensions of the sidewalk into the parking lanes, and they're trying to attract bikers to come and sit there, and businesses are going to be authorized to build these things out. And all of this is going to make a cluttered navigation situation for people who are blind and vision impaired, and may even be very confusing to people with other disabilities, cognitive disabilities, people who use the regularity and consistency of the sidewalk
to navigate and remember where they're going to get along on the street and get on their bus and go to work or whatever they're doing.
Thank you, Doris. We have a little more time. Patrick has been involved with the Accessibility Advisory Committee for between 20 and 25 years. Patrick, you were the first one to talk this, and the last one that I would bow to is also to Denise, the vice chair of the Accessibility Advisory Committee.
Okay.
Patrick, do you have any final words, Patrick? Patrick? Denise?
And Philippa, yeah. Don't forget me.
Yeah, thanks, Tino. I appreciate that. I didn't expect to be recognized. I would just say that before we go forward with floating bus stops or any of the installations, that you make sure that you have all of these improvements in the ones that you're building. The problem with what we have right now is what happened in Montgomery County is that you have a piecemeal situation, whereas some of them have these improvements, some have other improvements. Some of the bus stops have one bike lane, some have two bike lanes. And visually, of course, individuals who can see can recognize what is out there. But for those of us who are blind, we don't know what we're walking into. We don't have any idea. So having that information and all the information in the design going forward is going to be better. We're trying very desperately in Montgomery County to have them go back and retrofit the floating bus stops that they have put in already. I would prefer that they don't have them at all, but if they're going to do them, they have to put them in a consistent fashion with expectations of equivalent information that everyone gets in an intersection. And that's the equivalent intersection design is really something that the Federal Highway Administration has gone forward and said has to be there because it's an ADA requirement equivalent to program access. Thank you.
Yes,
thank you, Tino.
Denise, any last word, Denise, and then Philippa. Denise and Philippa. Philippa, you mentioned.
Yes. I was just going to say that when I catch a bus that has one of those floating islands, I stay on the sidewalk because I feel like a sitting duck if I'm on that little island. If there was a traffic accident or anything breaks out at the bus stop, you're just a sitting duck. There's nowhere to go. There's really no escape unless you can jump the rail, which I guess I could if I had to. But the other thing is, though, when they're doing all these designs, and they're bending over backward for the bikers. And I understand the millennials and the new voters and blah, blah, blah. But do something to make these bicyclists accountable. Every day I walk out of here, I'm looking over my shoulder like I'm driving because a bike might be zooming up on me or coming at me, which happens every single day. I'm in the 14th and U Street area. And they're on the sidewalks. They'll come right at you, rear back on one wheel to go past you. I mean, it's just ridiculous, and something needs to be done to make these people accountable.
Philippa, you'll have to join Patrick and me when we try and make the rounds of the Bicycle Association. They have a powerful lobby. We have no such lobby, but we need to begin educating the bicycle community. Denise, one last chance. Otherwise,
yes. Okay, this is Ms. Rush. The ones that have already been placed, it's kind of like you've let the horse, you've closed the gate after the horse has got out the barn. And maybe if we had speed bumps and when the bike went over the speed bump, it made a noise or something and we would know something is coming. We have got to do something to notify people that those bikes are going to be flying by.
I think Cesar mentioned that they have that in mind. So hopefully they'll continue implementing with what they do.
Like I said, I would gladly meet someone and we all experience it together.
Yes, indeed. As I have emphasized, when they continue planning, they should involve people with disabilities who have a background in transportation and Many of us would be happy to meet with Megan and with Cesar in their future work. We have to.
And it should be a blind person and someone in a wheelchair. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
And let me just add right quick, it's not just people with visual disabilities. People with 20/20 are having issues with the way these bikes are zooming up on them. That's all. Thank you.
And scooters.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Megan, Cesar, Johannes. Thank you very much. Please remember that we are available to you as you continue your design process. Do not leave us out any longer during the planning phase. We don't want to have to come back and try and convince you to do something retroactively. It'll cost more money that way in any event. Thank you again, Megan.
Thanks so much, everybody, for your time. Appreciate all the really constructive feedback and look forward to continuing our work together.
Okay. Next on the agenda is the discussion about fixed routes and travel training, especially with respect to working with people with cognitive disabilities. I think, Debbie, yes, you're on board, right, Debbie?
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah, Debbie, since you're our house expert in this, maybe you could start us off.
Sure, thank you. This came from our July meeting where I raised the point that as we see people coming back into the community, especially the folks with cognitive and developmental disabilities are beginning to return to their previous activities, I think it's a good opportunity for us to consider offering them both an update in terms of a list of all the information that we've been talking about with regard to the both the safety features and just the new features since they were last travel trained, to consider offering travel training again to a lot of the organizations and folks who may have not been travel trained or were travel trained prior to the pandemic, and also to use this as an opportunity to think about, with this population, there is almost a pre-travel training component that I think needs to be considered when we are going about travel training, in that families often have a very hard time allowing their loved ones with developmental disabilities to be fully integrated in the communities. And so they continue to rely on the more segregated activities and living arrangements and day types of programs. And so with transportation, they do the same thing, although you'll have those who love Metro Access and paratransit and those who are afraid of Metro Access and paratransit, and therefore you still have providers offering a lot of that transportation. And it's frankly not necessary in my opinion, but I do think that it's an opportunity for us, as long as we are helping people re-enter the community, to think about what might be ways to reduce the family, particularly its family members, anxiety and concerns about even contemplating the use of the fixed routes. So my recommendations have to do with both collecting and bringing together all of the updates, offering new travel training, but also thinking about travel training as extending to those very, very first steps as people start to think about the supports they need to get into the community. And I'll leave it at that, and we can talk about that further. I've talked about it with Mr. Blake and other members of his team. I think that there's an enormous, you know, just listening to the conversation now about the floating stops, these are the sorts of things that, as anxious as people with all kinds of physical disabilities will be, family members who have loved ones with developmental disabilities worry about the lack of judgment that these folks have and the difficulty in the quick thinking that's needed to respond to a cyclist who is flying down a bike lane without regard to who else is there. And these are just the kinds of things that families resist. And as someone who has provided services and worked with this population, I know that if they would use the fixed routes, they actually would ultimately be much happier, but we have to get them there.
Yes, may I just comment that I know of a young man, a friend of mine actually, who in his early getting to go on to public transit, and he got onto a bus and he didn't have exact change, and the driver mentioned to him how much more he needed to pay, and he explained that he didn't have the money, and he was so frustrated that this grown man, in front of all the bus passengers as well as the driver, broke down and cried right there. And of course the bus driver said, please, you know, go on, sit down. But this is a really hardship, and you can be fooled by the appearances of many people who have a cognitive disability. So we need to get into better training for ourselves, and then help others understand what their needs are. Debbie, you mentioned Christian Blake. Christian, or anyone, Carol, of staff, do you have anything to add about how we can introduce this or reintroduce this into training?
That's a great question. Good afternoon, everyone. We do have a member of our Office of Eligibility Certification and Outreach office online, and they are the team that conducts the travel training. So would someone from Elledge like to chime in and specifically address Ms. Fisher's point?
Absolutely. Afternoon, everyone. This is B. And it is
B.
It is so good to see you all.
Likewise, Dr. B.
I'm hearing the voices. I got excited about all the conversation that was going on. You all are getting into it, and I'm happy to be able to add to the conversation in regards to this point. So I have a few things to share, and just bear with me. I will be reading from some stuff that we put together today in hopes that it answers the questions that you all have and the specific questions that Ms. Fisher has. So if, and then at the end, if there are any questions, please don't hesitate to ask any questions and so forth. So what we wanted to share is that our office does have travel trainers. We have three. I see Doris has her hand up. Doris, you had something to share?
Oh, no, that was before you started this.
Okay.
Or it, yeah, no, I wasn't, it wasn't directly related to this, no. It was something just before.
She needs
to move. Okay, absolutely, we'll go, thank you. So Metro has three travel trainers on staff. Mr. Reggie Ward mostly works with our seniors. Janae Ocasio works with the school and also with customers with intellectual disabilities and customers with developmental disabilities. Bridget Doherty is our certified O&M specialist, and she works with customers who are blind or have low vision. And we also have some contract travel trainers that we use. All travel trainers can work with customers regardless of their disability, unless they're customers that are blind and low vision. Now, currently, direct travel training has been on hold due to the pandemic. However, during this time, our office has remained in contact with organizations and individuals by phone and done virtually and through webinars to discuss and give guidance. And that has been mainly about the provisions related to how to apply for services during this pandemic and what they need to bring in, so forth. So that's where it's mostly been focused on. Many of our graduates and former customers who've experienced travel training and is now confident to do it on bus and a rail, they are really aware and understand the process of keeping their reduced fare program or Metro Access ID cards current. So they've been good. It's mostly been with new customers we've been working with. But we have been pleased to work with those customers and their families to understand what that change in the process is on how to get a new card or to recertify and provide them as much detailed description. So folks can continue to call our office for that. We have people available to discuss with customers exactly what they need. Some have expressed the interest in travel training, and what we have done is maintain their contact information so that when the time comes and we resume that, we can follow up with them and begin the process. So as we approach travel training, our process or our task is just to teach people how to travel safely and independently on the bus and rail, or as we say in transit, fixed route services. Now, each person we work with is an individual. So we treat them like that and not like a particular diagnosis or so. When we receive referrals for travel training, usually the information we receive is very basic. So our first step is to make that telephone call, which is what we generally do. Go over some basic information. If family members or caregivers or parents are available, we include them in that process because we understand that that might be for comfort level. It might be for additional information on the customer. Anything that will help that process to advance, we're going to do. We do schedule in-person appointments, and we do that either at their home, a group home, day program. Some people are okay with being at a familiar landmark. We meet them wherever they feel most safe and comfortable to start the process so that, and if their family members want to come, they can, but we do that just to make things a little easier for the customer. We understand some concerns of being nervous and afraid and so forth. So anything that would make them settle more and feel comfortable, that's what we do. That process also generally includes setting travel training goals and observing through kinds of conversations and things at our first meeting. And this basic information we ask or want to determine from an individual, like, are they able to make safe crossings of the street? Are they able to read a bus schedule? Interpret a map, things like that. Taking verbal directions, you know, some are able to identify like certain landmarks and maybe familiar places, things of that nature might make that are the kinds of things we look at when we are doing that initial meeting with a particular customer. Things also like understanding rules and responsibilities of being a passenger. You know, and those are just a few of the things that we look at or discuss, but we also keep the process in a more conversational, relaxed atmosphere, again, because we know that it has to be step by step by step, because we want to make sure that the person is easy and relaxed in the process. We do talk about a lot of stuff, but we want to make sure it's more relaxed conversation is what that typical setting is, and not just come in and straight to doing some paperwork and so forth. So it's a process. building trust is really important in this whole process, because if we build trust, then we're able to get more information to help the customer build upon their skills. So other questions we might gather in this process is if they've ever taken a ride on the bus or on the train, where do they like to go most? Because that could be exciting. If you got a spot that you really want to go to, they may be more apt to participate in order to do that. And so we take one or two places where there may be, and then we start to build a process or an assessment to see and if it is possible. We know that some customers like to go for very short places until they feel more comfortable. Some other customers can take longer trips because they feel more comfortable. And again, this is individualized. It is all on what the person's comfort level is throughout the process. Now, if a person has basic skills and appears likely to learn independent travel, then we go forth to make a plan. And students or customers are involved in what that planning process is. So the planning is not limited to what I'm about to share. It is, you got route information that we go through, and we discuss that before and after each travel session. We also discuss the weather and what it may be like for appropriate dress in certain weather conditions. We understand for some customers what we may think is appropriate, what they think is appropriate, and what they may have as appropriate is different, but we try to make sure we understand what that is, and so that we can help the customer prepare. We also discuss safety features on the bus and the trains. We also talk about having your card ready, making sure if you have a cell phone or smartphone, which a lot of customers do these days, even our customers with cognitive disabilities, many have those smartphones. We make sure that it is charged or you bring your charger. So that's an example. Emergency numbers handy. So just in case they have to contact someone, we maintain those emergency numbers and make sure those are in place. We share with them other Metro safety policies, like Metro's mobile device policy. So if they're working with a Metro employee, whether it is a bus operator or a station manager, that they're aware of what that policy is, that Metro employees can't be holding a cell phone, assisting a customer, even if it's for help. Metro's policy with that is different. So we tell them how and the best way to approach that so that they understand and able to get the services they're looking for and what they need. We discuss, you know, trip planning and so forth. So it's little by little or full on, depending on the person, is the kind of travel training that they do. We tell them that it's good to have a lanyard. I'm sorry.
We're running short of time, and there are some hands up.
Okay.
Wanting to ask you, Anu, I see at least one hand up. Do you see others?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. Can you hear me?
Do you see anyone? I see that Doris has her hand up.
Can you hear
that's
me?
That's a new one. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doris.
Hi, how are you?
Hi,
anyway, I was just wondering, so are you talking about now what you're doing right now or just travel training in general? Is there travel training going on right now? And if so, how many people are being travel trained, say, like in the last year versus what it was in 18 or 19? And when, you know, has WMATA looked at any policy about when it's going to restart in a more full-blown program?
Well, we haven't done any direct travel training since it was that early 2020 in the pandemic. What we have done, it's either going to be virtually or we'll do some discussions by phone, but we haven't done anything that would be direct travel training with customers. Again, most of our interaction with customers has really been on how to either obtain service or renew services.
So is that the same way for the travel training that's done for blind and vision impaired consumers who, I don't know whether you're still using Bridget or whoever, but that's a whole complex orientation and mobility together with travel training. So is that being done now? I mean, I don't see how you could do that virtually.
That is not being done now. Again, we're not doing any direct travel training at all. Not any at all.
How long until you think that it'll get back to kind of semi-normal with at least semi-in-person stuff? And what happens with the program in terms of, whether the WMATA board put in a budget item, will that just evaporate because of current needs?
No, I don't want to say.
I'm asking you, are you guys going to have resources to go ahead?
We will be returning to travel training when it is safe to engage in a person without the advice of social distancing of 6 feet. Right now, what we're trying to do is allow return to normal on fixed route and on paratransit service. Fixed route basically has returned to normal. We're going to do the same thing on paratransit. And once things get back to normal and the concept of social distancing reduces to a point, we will re-engage in travel training. If social distancing continues for an extended period of time, that's where Dr. B, Chris Colbert, Mr. Johnson, and the entire travel training team will have to now revamp the travel training process to take social distancing into consideration. In terms of the budget, the money will continue to be a committed aspect of the Access Services Department's budget on an ongoing basis. So even if there's a one-year blip, that does not impact future budgets. The travel training will remain a core aspect of our annual budget.
Debbie,
so that line item will still be there. Okay.
Debbie,
going forward.
Yes, thank you. And I want to thank you, Dr. B, for reviewing what happens. My concern is just as we start to anticipate and plan, the two things that I would like to suggest is that there is material that's put together that summarizes all of the changes. Well, there's really three things: that a written description of the changes that have been implemented from a security perspective, and those are things that we've talked about that have happened during this interval when people have not been out in the community. To consider some sort of a refresh travel training opportunity for people. Again, they haven't been doing it. They're out of the habit. And I think it would be useful. People may ask for it. During this time interval in Maryland, for example, the state is moving ahead with moving people into their full community-based programming, which means there will be more people moving about the community in unsegregated settings as a function of CMS rule changes. And then the third is there are barriers to getting family members And it's not necessarily the people themselves, although it can be, but to getting family members to even consider travel training. And so you described some of the things you do, and I would strongly recommend that you consider actually creating opportunities for family members themselves. Remember that a lot of family members in the suburbs themselves don't use fixed route transportation. So literally introducing travel training is almost a foreign concept to them. They're used to getting in their cars and driving around, and that's their expectation for their loved ones. And so there's almost this informational training requirement for families to come to see for themselves how convenient use of bus and rail would be for their own lives. And before we can even get the conversation of a travel training, they'll go to Metro Access maybe because they want their kids picked up, and you know, they think of it as taxi service, and the abilities ride feels and looks like taxi service. But there are many reasons why these families actually, and the folks themselves, would be so much happier. So I would strongly recommend that consideration be given to using this time to put together something that really reintroduces the opportunities to both the folks themselves with the cognitive disabilities, and in some ways even more so to their family members, because this is really foreign for many of them, believe it or not. And I know that sounds strange, but it is. Thank you.
Dr. B, we may have guests who are waiting to do the next agenda item, e-paper sign reporting. Do we have a guest? If not, we can continue the discussion about fixed route travel training.
Actually, Tino, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can hear
you. Okay. Anu's having trouble with Zoom again. And we don't have guests. This was supposed to be a committee discussion, but before for the e-paper sign. So if you'd like to continue the other and wait and discuss this e-paper sign next time,
Okay, let's do that next time. But you know, I do see Jim Hammer, an old friend of ours.
Sorry, I just saw him.
Yeah, I've been hanging around so I can participate in the conversation and
sure,
Jim. Guide the complaints and responses. We're happy to speak next month as well.
Tino, I didn't realize Jim was still on the call.
So should we?
Travel training is an important subject, so I'm happy to defer and
come back next month.
Are you ready for me?
You might come back. Okay. Well then, in order to finish or continue, Debbie, you mentioned some of the things about families. Now, I'm aware of families who have young people with cognitive disabilities who live in communities in private houses as a group. Dr. B, don't go away, Dr. B. Dr. B. Dr. B, you're need to unmute. Dr. B. Does your staff go out to any of these houses or homes where there are groups of young people or older people with cognitive disabilities? Do you go out to train them?
Oh, absolutely, we do. We do groups. We do have group travel training, and we also have individual travel training if customers request that. And the points that Ms. Fisher just made, we'll definitely take those into consideration. There's some of what she shared are points that we have already discussed and have thought about so forth, but we wrote them down. So thank you very much for sharing that information.
Sure.
Thank you.
Deborah, anything else?
No, thank you. I really appreciate it. I think, and frankly, I think this also applies to customers with psychiatric disabilities. I think it also applies to people with new disabilities or their loved ones, because the newness of it is frightening. And understanding that there are people who simply never use public transportation. And so getting them to get on board with their loved ones using and accessing and seeing how convenient it is. I could tell you stories for the rest of the day of how those are some of the biggest barriers to loved ones being able to just be travel trained to go a few stops on the bus or in transportation, or heaven forbid when the weather is a little more chilly and they have to wear a coat. And I've gotten phone calls as a provider. Do you know, I saw so-and-so and it's freezing outside or it's raining or whatever. So these are the things that I think I consider those pre-travel training that, and the benefit to WMATA is those people end up on, you know, in paratransit and they really don't need to. And then the families complain about that. So I really do believe that if we are trying to create a normalized community inclusion life for folks with cognitive and developmental disabilities, there are things we can do to help facilitate that even before we get to the travel training itself.
Debbie, we definitely would agree. And the one thing I wanted to share is that we are skilled at the new group of individuals, as well as those mature individuals, individuals who know how to travel train, but they're new to our area or city, or the new person who has never done it before or new to their disability and may have had it, had skills or sets to ride bus and rail before, but not ride it with their disability. So we definitely look at all those things and approach each person as an individual, meet them where they are to provide them that level of service. But thank you for sharing. And it looks like we all can swap stories back and forth. So we appreciate that. And I wrote it all down.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you.
Excuse me.
If I could prevail on you, Debbie, if I could prevail on you to probably draft four or five paragraphs that you could share with the committee about your ideas regarding this, and of course, share it with Dr. B. I'd appreciate it. I only have anecdotal experience with people with cognitive disabilities. And the stories that I've heard about when they've tried to go on public transit are really distressing. And I think more of us need to know about it. And Deborah, you're our expert. If you could give us four or five paragraphs to think about it, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. It may not be four or five. It might be three or four, but I will definitely put something together. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Thank you. Anu's having a little bit of difficulty again with...
Sorry.
We can't hear her. So if she would like to remind you that it's time for a public comment period.
Right.
If not, then we can continue the same discussion. We don't know if anyone wants to give public comment. We haven't heard yet.
Okay. Well, if we have no one.
Tino, I have one question.
Sure.
Having followed the rail for the last 2 weeks, there have been a large number of deer that have been hit. And there have also been a large number of unidentified people walking on the tracks.
Wow. Yeah.
And there is no description. It's just a question of single tracking because of, or skipping stations because of. And I wonder if we might get some sort of feedback. There's been a lot of police activity near the State Department and on Capitol Hill. There have been people walking in the tunnels that are unidentified. And in Maryland, there have been a number of deer that have been hit by the trains. And I think it might be interesting to get a report back, a little more about those incidents than are posted on the website.
If you can think of the the specific persons or department to address this, could you let us know and we'll invite them to discuss this at a future meeting?
Okay, we can take note on that.
Sure. Well, in the remaining time, Jim Hamry is still here. If Jim, could you come back on and either preview or summarize what you had been intending to say?
Well, I appreciate everyone's interest in the e-paper distribution of real-time signs around the region. We have had a very busy summer, and I believe we've added another 150 signs to the network. But if you are concerned about any single sign not functioning properly, please feel free to call the customer service line, the 637-7000, area code 202, or simply tweet at Metro, and that complaint will get to my office and we will fix it. I would add that we are in the process of working with our vendor to update the system software. You've probably heard that before a million times. And until next week, I can't guarantee that all signs will be functioning, but after Monday, they all should be up and operating. The system will be through its user acceptance test, and we should be 4G compatible and have plenty of capacity on the server to handle all the new signs. So that's it, and happy to answer any specific questions.
Jim, do you handle the messages that are on signs, for example, the signs that are in the metro stations that normally give ads or other messages? Do you handle
that? I do not. That is handled through our metro marketing program. They have a contract with a vendor who actually provides the digital signs and the data.
Okay. I asked that because we are concerned that, and especially now that they've extended the masking requirements, we did get them to post reminders to riders that they have to wear masks. I haven't seen those lately on the signs, but then I'm not there, you know, 12 hours a day or so. But maybe we can talk to them because people have to be reminded, and in fact, the fines have gone up twofold if they don't properly wear them.
With the extension of the mask mandate on public transit until January,
yes,
we have kept all of our signs on Metrobus, and I believe that as part of what's called the Public Information Display System, the PIDS, within the Metro Rail stations, they're continuing to present a mask required message along with some audio announcements.
You mentioned signs, and during the prior discussion regarding floating bus stops, audible pedestrian signals was raised. You don't deal with that, do you? Audio pedestrian signals?
Well, we coordinate with the local DOTs on behalf of Metrobus to try and fix signal timing matters, make corrections where necessary, and troubleshoot when we can. So we will be actively engaged in trying to come up with the mitigating strategies that you talked about with DDOT.
Right.
So recently with Arlington County, and I think we came to a clear understanding, and then they chose not to improve the bus stop, so they left it alone.
Jim, this is Pat Sheehan. A question just on the accessible pedestrian signals. In the case of where you are assisting with the installation, are you updating them to so that they in so that they utilize the leading pedestrian animal portion of those signs?
Yeah, the leading pedestrian interval is part of the signal phasing.
Yes.
That is an adopted policy by DDOT in all, I believe, all of their traffic signals and in Arlington. I'm not entirely sure about VDOT. I have not had complaints or issues that we've had to address with them recently.
Okay, thank you, sir. That's it's been something where some signals are not signalization, or at least the audible portion of the APS has not always coincided with the leading pedestrian interval. So I stand on the sidewalk for an extra 3 or 4 seconds while I watch my sighted counterparts cross the street, because I think they're smarter and they can see, not knowing that the sign is on to walk across.
I don't know about smarter. I do that as well. I hold back, because you never know when there's another car trying to run the red light or something. So
yeah, but the LPI is a good when it's synced properly, it's a very good 3 or 4 seconds to be able to show cars that, hey, you've got a pedestrian in the intersection here, and it's a safety feature. Good. Thank you, Jim.
One of the challenges DDOT faces is they have a wide range of signals of varying ages, and so you're encountering, you know, their newest installations all sync up to exactly what they're supposed to, but there's another, you know, several thousand that are old and haven't been updated, but over time will be.
Good. Thank you, Jim.
Doris, you had your hand up, and then also Phil.
Yes. This is Doris. We had a presentation on new accessible pedestrian signals at the last Disability Advisory Committee meeting. Well, actually, we had maybe three of them in the spring and early summer. And what they're proposing is to get rid of, I may not be using the technical term, but the spoken word, and using pulses. And so, Jim, you may know about this development, but it is extremely disturbing to Arlington residents, and you know we worked very hard to get the spoken word signals so that people could, at the point of needing to cross the street, you know which street to go, you can go on, and which street you had to wait for. And so they're telling us now that they're doing this all over Virginia. So I'm saying also to the group that, and to the committee, maybe we need to find out what the localities are doing, because they're saying that the access board changed their mind on what kind of audible signals to use. And I have my concerns that might not be true. So we're investigating it, certainly in Arlington, but maybe this is something WMATA should look at, given all these developments we've talked about today.
I will be happy to do the research and try and be ready to report back
on fantastic.
Our 8-member jurisdictions.
Doris is correct in that the way the traffic signals are now set, you do have the rapid ticking sound that indicates that it's time to cross. However, I would say that, which is becoming more of the standard, but I would also say that you would get a indication of the streets that you are ready to cross. If you hold the button in for 3 seconds, it'll give you a description of the walk sign is on to cross blah, blah, at blah, blah streets. So that additional information is also part of the standard configuration for the accessible pedestrian signal.
Okay, they didn't say that to us, but I'm concerned also we're having people who have physical disabilities being concerned about the pressure that you have to new pressure that you have to exert on the signal buttons.
Right. The pressure on the signal buttons is should be similar to what the ADA requires for any kind of button. So if it's not correct, that does have to be reported.
Since Rico Dancy is not here, is it possible for us to go beyond 6 o'clock? I know the interpreters are both here, even though Rico is not. Can we go a few minutes? Because there are a couple of questions. Anyway, Phil, go ahead.
We can, but just real quick, can the interpreters just confirm for us that there was no one on who needed sign language interpretation? And if not, then yes, they can exit at this time, which is their normal time, and your meeting can extend for a few minutes.
Hi, this is a sign language interpreter. We can confirm there's been no attendees requesting American Sign Language interpretation, so we will leave. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill, you had your hand up.
Yes, this is for Jim as a quick suggestion. If it won't mess up your bus schedule too much, would it be possible to have the driver ask the passengers boarding the bus whether the e-paper sign is working at that bus stop? Then they could call it in right there.
Yeah, I wish that was the company I worked in. I don't think that would be effective. The best way for people to get information to us is to either call or email or tweet at us.
I found that on the rail, I see the station manager and tell them the elevator, the escalator is out, and they immediately call ROC.
The station manager's function is to make sure that the station is functioning, that bus operator is driving the bus. So there's a totally different thing. They can't just call somebody in, or it's a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, typically it would be the end of their shift before they're able to fill out a form or make a phone call. And they can't do any of that while they're operating the vehicle. So the quickest way is to send us the information directly.
Oh, I was just thinking they're stopped at the stop. And as multiple people are getting on, flashing their cards, it wouldn't be while the bus is moving or anything else. I mean, just give them a button to push. I mean, they can call the police by pushing a button.
Doris, do you have something you wanted to add? You have your hand up.
Doris? Me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm here. Actually, I think that was from the last time, but I did want to ask Jim, because this was part of the discussion. Maybe a couple of years ago, y'all might remember, we had a discussion with the people who operate the customer service center, the call-in center, right? And also what I'm talking about is the automated center that you use after hours or that you can use during hours, business hours. But there were supposed to be improvements to the experience using, you know, the trip planning and bus scheduling information on the automated system. And I'm wondering if we can find out, number one, what's ever happened with that, because I see no changes. But number two, the biggest thing that I would surely like to see, particularly during this COVID period, is I can't call in and find out the scheduled time of a bus. And if I know that the train is not going to get me, for example, the Pentagon, to get on a bus that I want to get on, like the 7A, for example, or the 7F, I can't, when I get the time, I can't just say next bus time. I have to go through this routine that the computer is you know, maybe it's an old routine, but I have to go back through this routine again to get the just simply get the time of the next 7A, or I can't say now, or I can't say switch to 7F. When's the next bus? And that would be very helpful because sometimes I'm sitting here at my office and I want to go take that train and take that route home rather than another route home. And I can't get the information quickly enough because I have to keep going through this, you know, rotation that the computer is stuck on.
So since
Phil, you've used that some, I think you might know what I mean, but it's just
we've talked a lot over the years about the length of time that it takes to get any information when you're calling in to the customer service line. If you remember, there was a 20-second message that you had to listen to before you even got the chance to make choices. I think they've done some improvements there.
I know from recently it's not implemented.
Yeah, the biggest focus has been on, of course, on web-based information, the electronic trip planner, the application with bus ETA and those sorts of things. Have you had any success with looking at our trip planner online and then having it read you the information? Because that does have the opportunity of seeing three different travel choices and then modifying your trip, and it's fairly interactive. Not perfect, but better than the audio version.
Well, I'm just often on the street needing to do that, making a choice where I'm going to go, you know.
And well, just calling up. We have an initiative.
Or standing in the metro station and not being able to see the signs, right, and needing something audible.
We have an initiative on Metrobus that just began. There's a new project manager assigned called the Customer Information Improvement Program. And I can ask that they add that to their task to make sure, mm-hmm, the focus is making sure that all of the information being presented to customers is accurate to real-time degree. And we can also address the formats in which that information is provided to try and begin to address what you were talking about. So I'll take that note away and share it with the project team when we next meet.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Hey, Tino.
Yes, Patrick.
This does not have anything to do with Jim's presentation, but I know we had talked about it at the AAC meeting, that we're considering having the Richard Hettinger ceremony at the end of January. So over the next month or so, I think if people agree with this, would be good to have...
breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. It would be good to be able to have individuals nominations for the Richard Hettinger Award, which we would like to have virtually at the end of January.
Can I say, Pat, that I have to say that the Virginia General Assembly will meet just at that time?
We haven't set the date yet. Yeah, we haven't set the date, but what we're looking at, and since it's virtual, I think we can make some allowances, Doris. Certainly, we haven't set a date.
The last week in January
and
the first. You know, the last week in January and the first week of February is when we always have to go down to Richmond. So,
okay,
Patrick, what's your suggestion, Tino, on when we should make recommendations?
I don't think we need. I know it's late tonight, Tino. So I just wanted to make the announcement that we're looking to do that. I would say, why don't we? And this is, of course, up to the chairs. But why don't we look at trying to get nominations in by a certain date, and then we can settle on whether we want to have it the third Monday or whatever.
So could you suggest when we should have nominations in?
I would say I think it would be good if we could have nominations in by let's say December 1st. Okay, that would give us what? Do you guys care? November 1st, December 1st?
I'm good. Phil, if you're still on, how about having nominations in by December 1st? Phil? He's gone. Well, I'll pass on the message to Phil. Oh, no, you're still here, Phil. Can we nominate Hedinger Award nominees by December 1st? No, he's gone. Well, anyway, we're way over 10 minutes, probably the longest we've ever gone over on a official meeting. But I appreciate the fact that we've been able to do that. So I thank you all, especially to Debbie on what she covered, and she has promised to give us three paragraphs at least on her mission for us. And thank you, Dr. B. It's always good to see you, and Carol and Jim. You're my favorite guest because you're always so accommodating when you come. Really. So for now, though, can I get a nomination? A nomination. A suggestion for.
I move the meeting be adjourned.
Second.
Okay. Any objections? Hearing no objections, this meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Tino. Nice meeting.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Good to see you all, too.
Hey,
B.
Hey, Dr. Good to hear your voice.
Yeah. You all, too. Good to see everybody. Thank you.
Patrick, if you're still on, can I talk to you?
We don't know where the music came from, but I guess. Anu, I don't know if I have the.